You're listening to Radically Pragmatic, a podcast from the Progressive Policy Institute. We talk with lawmakers, policy experts, and thought leaders about the issues driving the news nationally and internationally. The Progressive Policy Institute is a catalyst for policy innovation and political reform with offices in Washington, D.C. and Brussels. Its mission is to create radically pragmatic ideas for moving America beyond ideological and partisan deadlock. We encourage analytical conversations, not your typical partisan talking points.
Hello, and welcome back to the next episode of the Raj Reports podcast. I am Curtis Valentine, co-director of the Reinventing America Schools Project, and I'm here in Austin at South by Southwest EDU for the annual gathering. I'm so glad to bring to you a podcast series we're calling What's Next? The Future is Now. And I have another guest here who is a dynamo within education. That is Dr. Constance Lindsay from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill School of Education. And she's doing such amazing work. I could not come to Austin knowing she'd be here and not bring her on the podcast. So hello. How are you doing today, Dr. Lindsay?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing amazing and so glad to really connect with you while we're here in Austin. What brings you to Austin and to South by Southwest EDU?
So I was invited here to do a panel on centering Black parents' voices in education. So EdChoice conscripted a survey on Black parents and their feelings about school choice. And so EdChoice very kindly invited me here to discuss the results and think about some reactions and some questions that we might have about what Black parents are actually saying.
No, I'm looking forward to it as well. Tell the listeners what you do at the University of North Carolina.
Sure. So I'm an assistant professor of educational leadership, technically. I'm in the Department of Education Policy Organizations and Learning. So I really count myself as an education policy researcher. This is year 4 out of 6 on the tenure clock for me there. Most of my research focuses on evaluating and understanding racialized achievement gaps, although I know that term has kind of fallen out of favor, but that's what I do. With the bulk of my work right now, really thinking about how to create and maintain a diverse, high-quality educator workforce.
And so, I mean, the work that you're doing, and I've already told you, I'm a huge fan of two of the podcasts that you have already been profiled on, Hidden Brain and Revisionist History. So I am, you know, doubly excited to have you on my podcast because now I can say that I'm in the same category with
yes.
Malcolm and Shanka, but I'm sure I'm not. But I'm curious, what about your work most excites you? I mean, what really, you know, when you're, whether it be a topic or a group you're working with, you know, what about the work you're doing right now really gets you excited?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think for me, the thing that's most exciting is when I really get to interface with parents and practitioners and really translate the research for their use. So for example, we worked on a report for the Wallace Foundation where we basically summarized 20 years of research on principles, and being able to actually report those findings back to principals and other stakeholders has been very cool to see that research go from sort of the painstaking process of going through all those studies to kind of synthesize them down to, you know, actionable findings that principals can use. So really the thing that most excites me is when I can work directly with practitioners, parents, and I feel like they take something home from their research.
And so through that, I guess you're learning a lot, but how do you use that information to determine what you'll do next? And so what I'm really curious about, you know, what you're doing now, but what's coming on the horizon within your work?
Yeah. So sometimes I just sort of have interesting questions that come to me and, you know, hope that maybe people will be interested in them. One nice thing is that a lot of our work has kind of pointed me in one particular direction. So, one of the things that we've seen across several of the studies that we've done on the impact of Black teachers is persistent impacts, large impacts for disadvantaged Black boys, young Black men. And so, pivoting a little bit of my work to really focus on their health and well-being. So right now we actually so with my colleagues from school counseling and school psychology, we actually published a paper last year thinking about how school-based professionals should address trauma and sort of other aspects of well-being for Black boys when they're younger as a means to kind of prevent negative later outcomes. And so we just put in a grant to actually collect some more data around what health and wellness looks like for young Black boys. So I'm really very excited about that. Mostly because we know that sort of post-pandemic things like socio-emotional health and well-being have really suffered. And I think it's particularly suffered for Black boys. So super excited about that and very sort of passionate about the subject matter. So that's a big thing. And then also just really continuing to work to help policymakers and stakeholders figure out where on earth we're going to get the next crop of teachers and making sure that those teachers are actually responsive to the needs of kids in the classroom.
I'm curious, when you think about those who partner with you, which community institutions, higher ed institutions, school districts, where are the bulk of your partnerships or clients or those who are coming to you for advice? Where are they, and what are they asking you when they do come to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, so I've worked with a wide range of stakeholder groups. I would say sort of the sweet spot for me is when people have put together networks of educators and they're sort of coming together with the intent of learning about a particular topic. So, for example, I'm on the advisory board of the Center for, I'm going to get it wrong. I think it's the Center for Teachers and Learning. I'll figure out the actual title. And it's housed at the American Institutes for Research, but basically they bring a bunch of teachers and leaders together to discuss particular topics. And so I've spoken to the folks as they've gotten together about things like teacher diversity and what that might look like. I've also spoken to groups of Black superintendents. I've spoken to a foundation that was specifically focused on Black parents. So, if people are interested in learning about something that I know or I've researched myself, I try to stay close to things that I know. I'm happy to make that translation for them. On the research side, I've worked with sort of lots of different types of social scientists. I was trained by an economist, but I have an interdisciplinary PhD. I work with a bunch of economists. More recently, I've been finding myself working with some regular psychologists, school counselors, to really make that translation down to the individual level. So I really, feel excited to be housed in a school of ed because that really gives me the opportunity to work with a ton of different people, but all focused on similar problems, if that makes sense.
No, it's interesting because when I talk about education, I look at it from the community perspective of the economics and the economy that reverberate around schools, whether it be contracts or in some cases even students being able to see themselves in the communities in which the schools rest, meaning it's one thing to have a beautifully built school, educators who are really speaking life into them. Giving them opportunities to see themselves in other careers. And then walking home from school, they don't see anything that really resembles the world that the school is presenting as open to them. And so how does the economy of the school function within the greater environment that the school sits in? And you think about models like you know, Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is sort of Black Wall Street, where you had these schools, but then on the way to school, you're passing by all these entrepreneurs and these folks who are literally supporting the school and creating pipelines in and out of the school back into the workforce, that in many cases we just don't see. And we sort of, you know, choosing to, you know, obviously create strong school systems and districts, that's the goal at least, while the communities and the Black white wealth gap continues to persist in the very community that we're saying we're trying to create opportunities for our students in.
Yes, for sure.
So we're here at, you know, we're here at South by Southwest, and, you know, this particular gathering really touts itself as an opportunity to bring education and technology together. This nexus of, you know, innovation, and, you know, innovation for many people is another word for technology, which is another conversation. But I guess my question for you is, what role will technology play in the work that you're doing moving forward at the university?
So I've actually been thinking about this. Technically, I'm on research leave this semester. I'm taking a class because I'm that kind of nerdy.
Oh, wow.
Person.
Okay, that's interesting.
I know. Yeah, right. But anyway, so I'm taking actually a machine learning class, because one of the things that we do in our work is we try to use like very large administrative data sets to answer research questions. And I'm just curious to see like how how those data can be used in the future to answer questions through the use of like machine learning, right? So instead of us trying to ask the data questions, like really having the data like sort of tell us what's going on. And I think what's cool in education, but that also holds us back sometimes, is that we do have a ton of information that we gather about students. Now, of course, there's privacy issues, and we need to be responsible and ethical and all that stuff. But I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us to use data better, and then also to democratize it, right? So, you know, a lot of times schools will collect information, they'll have information on students, on their performance, but it won't be available for parents and community members to use. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if there's an opportunity for, you know, tech or, you know, whoever wants to think about it to sort of democratize that data, make it available. You know, think about things like school ratings, think about ways to translate and make available information on individual performance to parents in a way such that they can understand it and sort of situate it in how things are going. And so I think, you know, South by Southwest is the perfect place, right, for that sort of thinking about that tech innovation. Last night I actually went to a thing on the future of higher education. Mm-hmm. And the president of Southern New Hampshire University. And so, you know, they have this really, what I think is probably more the future of higher ed, this model where, you know, if you've gotten credit somewhere, you can come back and you can finish. And he was just saying how many people they've been able to serve who were able to get their bachelor's degree. And a lot of that is through the use of automation and machine learning to sort of silo out the things that can be handled by the machine so that the people can actually do the work they need to do. So all of that stuff sounds super exciting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point about, you know, democratizing that information for parents is one that, you know, is most interesting to me, because, you know, being in this space, particularly around education, so-called education reform, there's always been this back and forth debate about, you know, whether particularly Black parents, you know, have information, but whether they know what to do with it once they get it.
Yes.
I think it's rather insulting. Yes. But I wonder whether that is part of the reason why we're slow to you know, to create these tools. Is there an assumption that they won't be used properly, or they won't be used at all? In your work, has that even come up in a conversation? And, you know, more generally, you know, how will your work center the experience of Black parents moving forward in instances like that?
Yeah, that is a great question. I mean, I think the assumption is that that people don't have the capability to sort of understand. But also, I feel like, particularly for researchers, it's incumbent upon us to make things clear for people, right? And so if you can't explain it clearly, it's not going to be used, and it's probably not useful. So I think that's kind of on us, right? You know, particularly because, you know, I've said this before, we receive, you know, federal funding, state funding, funding from foundations to do all of, you know, all of this exciting research. And there really has to be a plan to get it back to the people, because there are samples, there are students, so the people we get the data from. And so I personally feel like we have a responsibility to make that translation, and also to just make things plain so that people understand it, right? And I feel like some of the most rewarding presentations I've done have been to parents, and they have questions because they actually have to use the stuff, you know, on the ground in real time.
Yeah, I think, again, this is something that I think we'll continue to debate, unfortunately. But while we're doing that, I think we're missing opportunities. I'm curious. So you're here, you know, at South By, and there's speakers, there's you know, informal gatherings, there's meetups. But I often leave these gatherings with questions of like, so what's missing? Who's not here? What topics are we not discussing? Are there any blind spots that the conference organizers missed out on? You know, as you're here and once you depart, what are some topics, what are some stakeholders, some voices you think are missing from gatherings like South by Southwest EDU?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think the thing that we're missing in all of our discussions of education now are the students who disconnected after COVID, right? So sort of learning loss aside, at least those students came back. But my sense is that in a lot of places, there are students who have just never reconnected to formal schooling. And I have concerns about that, right? How do we find them? How do we reach out to them? How do we get them back connected? Because that's going to be a generational issue if they don't you know, get back on track, particularly at the high school level. So really thinking about, so, you know, of course, trying to address learning loss, but then also just really disconnected students who are probably, you know, coincidentally also very marginalized or disadvantaged. That's one area where I think a lot of us in education have some blind spots.
Yeah, I think, you know, no one's perfect. And I know these conferences try to do, you know, the best they can, but I think they're also, again, touting themselves as sort of the future of education.
Right.
It's really important that, you know, they push them and be, you know, be bold, but also I imagine it's about folks proposing different workshops as well. And so these opportunities for those who are listening in, proposing panels and discussions for next year to keep in mind. Before I let you go, I wanted, you know, to put you in this space again of the future of education and just project yourself forward to 2050. And you're thinking about the grandchildren of those who are in education now. What will education look like to them on a daily basis? You know, paint a picture for me about what you would like to see as it relates to how young people are receiving education and going about the learning experience on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think we'll have so much technology that some of the things that we need, like job wise, you know, won't be necessary. So I think the nature of learning has to change to really be sort of inquiry based. And really teaching people how to think and how to think critically and how to make sense of a lot of information. And so I hope that schools are or will be places where the ability to, where you learn how to learn, right? And you learn how to be an arbiter of what's happening in the outside world versus learning skills that might change, that you might not need. So really focusing on like developing people as learners, right? And developing people as, or developing students as people who will be able to sort of make sense of a very complex world, right? And figure out ways to make it better. But really focusing on that critical learning piece. I think that's kind of missing right now in schools.
Yeah, I think with the advent of, as the students call it, Google and YouTube University, where it's really not about what, it's the how and how you use those things. And it's sort of just the, to your point, the inquiry to begin with, like, what are you putting into these search engines? What are you asking them to do for you? Obviously, ChatGPT is top of mind to folks, but it still requires instruction, and it still requires you to have a sort of a goal in mind. What do you plan to do with this tool? You know, I think there are too many opportunities, but it is at a foundation, you know, this idea of learning. No, I'm excited about it. You know, it's a little scary, but it's also, I think, opportunities for folks to shape this. I want to thank you for, you know, connecting with me while we're here. I'll let you get back to the conference. I know, you know, there are a lot of folks looking to hear from you. So thankful you'll be able to you're able to join us. And so all my listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Roz Reports podcast. Again, my name is Curtis Valentine, and you've heard from the amazing Dr. Constance Lindsay from the University of North Carolina School of Education, and this podcast series, What's Next? The Future is Now, on location here in Austin, Texas, for South by Southwest EDU. Thank you all again for joining us, and I look forward to bringing you another episode coming soon. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening. Want to learn more about the Progressive Policy Institute? Follow us on Twitter at PPI and on Facebook at Progressive Policy Institute, or go to our website at progressivepolicy.org. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen and check back for new episodes. We'll talk with you soon.